You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal, and joining me today is Dr. Nathan Gilmore, English teacher at North Gwinnett High School, whose pets are all alive and accounted for, right, Nathan?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Apparently Ohio is a dangerous place for pets these days.
Oh my gosh, I hadn't heard that story, and when Trump said that, I stalled out. Like, I had no idea what he was talking about. I had to Google it. And I was like, what manner of insanity is coming? And it is insanity, but...
Yes.
Like, holy...
Well, God. And I mean, we're going to talk about this later, but I mean, what's even... Either even better about it or more depressing about it is the exchange of which that was a link. Because, you know, the question that the moderator actually started with, not to Trump, but to Harris, had nothing to do with immigration or dogs or... Well, I guess it did have to do with... immigration. I take that back, but it certainly had nothing to do with dogs.
I honestly don't remember the question because all of the answers were the same from Trump, except that one that had, you know, dogs in it. But I guess we've given away what we're talking about today.
Yes.
Before we get to that, Nathan, what's going on around the network? Are everyone else's pets safe as well?
As far as I can tell from social media, there haven't been any pets consumed by undocumented immigrants or anyone else. the Christian Feminist Podcast, to get into some actual factual matters, has released an episode on children's religious instruction. I haven't had a chance to listen to that one yet, but I'm looking forward to doing so.
Oh, so you don't know if they're for it or against it?
No. I am a blank slate, man. I'm a blank slate. Before they were live, also, finally, after several months of delay due to the farmers moving to a new house, released their latest Brothers Grimm episode, and I'm in the process of listening to that. I was listening to that when I was driving home today, and it's a fun episode, so I definitely recommend that one. Profiles, we haven't had any new interviews, but... part of that is because my contact over at Baylor University Press took a job with Penn State University Press. So I am in the process of, you know, trying to get settled in with Baylor. That's the bad news. The good news is I emailed, you know, my contact formerly of Baylor, and he's already got me connected with the theology and the history parts of Penn State University Press. So I've got a new book pipeline, Coyle. I've got awesome. A new supplier.
Well, we should get back to the debate that took place as of this recording last night. By the time this drops, it'll probably have been a couple of nights ago, and I'm sure details would have made the rounds already. But Nathan, what's your takeaway? If you have to summarize this in a sentence or two, what's your impression of the debate?
So we got zero new material from Harris. You know, I mean, just about everything she said at this debate also appeared in her convention speech at the DNC. Right. We had zero discipline from Trump. You know, I mean, I guess in one sense he was kind of single-mindedly obsessed with scary immigrants, as he has been for the last 10 years.
Sure.
And we got some genuine crazy from Trump, which, of course, is now the only thing that anyone's talking about, frankly, because it was the only interesting thing that happened. So, I mean, neither candidate had a sort of catastrophic Biden in June 2024 evening. But, you know, I kept thinking, I mean, the whole time the debate was going on, that if you had a competent candidate in either corner, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, legendary debater. I'm talking, you know, just a competent, you know, Bush level, Clinton level debater in either corner, that candidate would have run away with this thing.
I mean, I guess I'd push back a little bit on that. So I agree with you. I think I think I read this on National Review's live stream on the debate, but it sounded right. Harris's preparation was basically say things in every reply that are designed to get under Trump's skin. If Trump did any preparation at all, which he kind of famously doesn't, he clearly had had some presentation of here are the policies that you need to be sure you mention. Those would come tumbling out all jumbled together. I mean, again, as people who've been, you know, around Donald Trump publicly for the last 8 years or so, we kind of know what's happened, right?
Someone
told him, you need to talk about the border, you need to talk about Afghanistan, you need to talk about the economy. And what we got from Trump was border, Afghanistan, economy, all jumbled together with no real order or coherence.
Often
attached to the end of a response to his rising to Kamala's bait. So, I mean, that's
right, right.
But the pushback I would give is I actually think Harris did an excellent job debating in that she was trying to do is set off Donald Trump so that she would look like the sane adult in the room and not have to talk about any policy. So
the convention speech.
Yeah, yeah. So it's she said things that were designed to set him off without saying anything substantive about herself other than that she is not easily set off. So I think that counts as good debating. If you get under your opponent's skin, you get points there.
That's fair enough. And honestly, Coyle, I mean, we can get to this later or we can talk about it now, your choice. But, I mean, one question that kept occurring to me, because I have not watched a presidential debate, and I want to make sure I'm being accurate on this. I don't think I've watched a presidential debate since 2004. I've looked at transcripts. I've seen video clips, but this is the first time that I've watched one from bell to bell. And, the question that kept occurring to me is, I mean, the questions, let me make it plural, who is the audience for this thing and what is the purpose of this thing? And, I think that, if I were, an anthropologist, looking in on this, I've just traveled from, a continent where they don't do these things, and I'm trying to observe the nature of this ritual. All of the shorthand, all of the jargon, all of the inside jokes would tell me that this is mainly for insiders. At the same time, it is on national TV. It is, presumably broadcast into a whole bunch of houses. I don't know what kind of viewership we're looking at, but it just struck me as a bizarre thing. And I don't blame ABC for this because, I mean, of course, you've got to hype it up if you've got the sole Trump-Harris debate. There we go. I couldn't think of the names. But when they announced that this is the most crucial moment in the 2024 presidential campaign, I'm thinking this isn't even close.
With dramatic music in the background, right?
Well, absolutely, absolutely, yeah, yeah. I mean, the most important moment in the 2024 presidential campaign is Biden dropping out.
Yeah, certainly.
And
the Trump assassination attempt was probably up there.
That's in the top three. And then, Harris's, behind closed doors ascent to the nomination is also top three. But I mean,
and it's not over yet, so who knows?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this debate doesn't place.
I don't know. So obviously, since this was on ABC, apparently it was also on Disney Plus and Hulu.
They've
got the whole spectrum there, right? And I don't know yet if it'll be the only one. I know that shortly before the debate ended, Harris's campaign sent out a press release, they are ready for another one, right? For obvious reasons. I think it's pretty much generally agreed that Harris ran away with this one. So they're ready for another debate. They have other debates planned and scheduled, but of course that doesn't have to mean anything if one or both of them refuse to show up. So it's I don't know. Maybe this will be the only one, maybe not. I've lost the thread of, who is this for, right? That's the question of who. That's always hard to answer with debates. It certainly wasn't for the people of Philadelphia, despite being in Philadelphia. There wasn't a live audience there, which I think probably hurt Trump more than it did Harris.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he feeds off that, back and forth with the crowd in good and bad ways. Right. Trump is good at working a crowd. That is, I think, to his credit. But that he didn't have that crutch. And I think that probably hurt him as much as anything.
Right.
it is for the pundits, but it's really to try to nudge the polls, right? I mean, the Trump campaign's goal was they want another debate like he had with Joe Biden, and the Harris campaign's goal was they would also like a debate like that, but with, you know, them winning instead of the other side.
Right.
And the goal, as always, in the era of Twitter and in the era of campaign slogans and bumper stickers, is to get the one-liners in. As far as that goes,
that's been the case at least since 1984.
Yep.
I mean, that's the first one that I'm aware of. There might have been, you know, zingers before then, but of course, sure. Reagan had his famous zingers then, you know, followed by, you know, oddly enough, the vice presidential debate in 88 was the famous zinger. Ever since then, you're right. I mean, you know, it is. Can we become the 10-second video clip that gets played over and over?
Right, because most people aren't going to watch a whole debate. Most people are going to see the clip on the news or now see the thing go by on social media. So what is the one line or two lines that we can get in that people are going to see? So that's who the debate is for. The whole thing really isn't for anybody. The existence of the debate is for the purposes
except
of marketing.
Except for you and me, Coyle, because we watched the whole dang thing.
Well, if it was for me, they'd have had RFK there and probably Cornel West also.
There you go.
I would have watched the heck out of Cornel West debate those two.
Oh, man, that would have been fun. Yeah. Now, one thing, Coyle, I mean, that occurred to me is, I mean, Trump had to feel like he was running in the 2016 GOP primaries again. Because, I mean, I felt like most of the catchphrases from Harris were like GOP circa 2004 catchphrases, right? I mean, you know, we want equality of opportunity. We want tax cuts. We want small business benefits. We want, you know, involvement in foreign wars. I feel like, you know, George W. Bush was revisiting this debate, but he wasn't over on the Republican side.
Yeah, and there really wasn't a coherent alternative on the other side either, right?
So
Trump had run against foreign wars in 2016, and then to a lesser extent in 2020. So, yes, 2004, but with only one party running, I guess.
Yeah.
it also felt like 2016, right? As much as Trump wanted it to be him against Joe Biden again, it really felt more like Trump against Hillary Clinton. So I was teaching on the debates in class this morning, and I went back and rewatched the SNL parodies of the 2016 debates.
And
with a switch of actresses, it could easily be exactly the same thing. Like if you were trying to write an SNL sketch for last night's debate, it would basically be the same. You know, switching out Kate McKinnon for Maya Rudolph is who they have playing comedy.
Right.
So all of the dialogue could functionally stay the same.
Okay.
And I don't remember as much about the actual debates because I didn't go back and watch the entire 8 hours of debate with Hillary or whatever it was. But my memory from the time is that Hillary won those also and won them pretty handily. So, I don't know. I don't know what this is supposed to feel like. It didn't feel like 2020. Kamala's not Biden. COVID restrictions aren't in place, even though it was a quieter debate hall as it was in 2020. It still didn't feel the same there.
Right. And like I said, I mean, the main thing I was thinking of was, I mean, I felt like Harris was just kind of dropping George W. Bush catchphrases every few minutes. And as you said, I mean, because there is no Reaganite party anymore, you know, there was no sense that, okay, that's my material.
Yeah, and times when Trump could have done that, he didn't. Right? Could have said, "Hey, yes, I said get out of Afghanistan, and you guys botched it." He didn't say either of those things, or at least he didn't say either of those things well enough for them to be memorable.
Right. Now here's a question that I have, Coyle, because I mean, like I said, I haven't watched a convention or a presidential debate. Really in the era of YouTube, like YouTube ruined me. I will watch the 10-minute version rather than stay up and watch the 90-minute version every time.
Sure.
You know, unless I'm suddenly, you know, in Ed Song's chair and on a politics podcast, right?
So you're also going for the sound bites.
Yeah, I really am.
The convention, the debate was for you, Nathan.
Yeah, but, you know, what occurs to me is, you know, in 90 minutes of, you know, exchange, right? I mean, you know, what we get, you know, at least on social media, and again, that's my main conduit right now, because, you know, teaching public K-12, you know, we're instructed very clearly, don't let the students know how you're going to vote. Don't say anything about current politics, you know, around the students, because, you know, we just don't need that kind of trouble, right? So sure. I really don't hear much from my fellow adults about politics at work, you know? So, I mean, you know, judging from social media, which is my window into this, I mean, it looks like, I mean, the dog-eating part, which we're going to talk about, I promise, listeners, is the only thing that anyone picked up on. And like I said, it was in the middle of a just absolutely surreal exchange in its own right. So, you know, I once again, you know, I just kind of felt myself thinking, you know, okay, what was this TV event? And, you know, the oddity of it in Georgia, because, again, for the first time in 20 years I'm living in a swing state, is that the commercial breaks were all Trump and Harris commercials. So, you know, it seems like, you know, that'd be the time that they wouldn't buy ads, because they're already on the screen for 2 hours.
Right.
But, you know, they did.
Well, they probably didn't have control over that. They probably just bought ad packages for prime time, and
point taken.
Whatever
point
was taken on during prime time is when the ads were
right.
Going to go.
That makes sense.
Have seen on mostly on right-wing social media. Left-wing social media, of course, is triumphant, right? This is the great victory over the enemy that Kamala has scored. So
sure.
they're not getting into specifics, but they are talking about it. Right-wing social media, I think, is being very honest about the beatdown that Trump took in the debate.
Uh-huh.
But they are often, as you would expect, pointing out the biased moderators, that the moderators were in the tank for Kamala, which I have very little sympathy for that. I mean, at this point, the mainstream media has been left-wing for, 40, 50 years? Like, at some point, that's not really an excuse anymore. I also don't know that things would have been any different if it had been, you know, moderators in favor of Trump running the meeting. You know, if Sean Hannity had been the moderator, I think Kamala still would have gotten under Donald Trump's skin. And I think
that's
we
true.
Still would have gotten.
Let me ask you about this, though, because, I mean, unless I missed one, and honestly, by the end of the debate, I was doing more paper grading than I was watching the debate, because it just
sure.
got old.
Yeah.
But it seemed like the only fact-checking, the only direct engagement was with Donald Trump. I mean, there
yeah.
were a couple times when they told Kamala Harris, you still haven't answered the question. But, you know, as far as, you know, directly contesting an utterance of a candidate, that did seem like it was going one direction. And I feel like that would have been going the other direction had it been Sean Hannity or even, you know, now I can't think of any of their daytime
news
reporters.
I mean, it doesn't matter, right? Tucker Carlson
yeah.
or whoever.
Or
like
not,
anyone
but I mean,
on that side.
Not their editorial personalities, but their people who just read the news.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
Brett Baer or someone like that.
Sure, sure.
If he's still on Fox News. Listeners, I'm sorry. I stay away from Fox News as much as I can.
I mean, I stay away from most cable news. So
yeah, me too.
I don't think I had ever seen either of the moderators before last night, for whatever
no,
that's
me
worth.
Me neither. But I feel like even if it were a news reader from Fox News, that the direct confrontations with the candidates would have been different. You don't think that would have been a variable?
I think you might have had more pushback to Kamala instead of to Trump and more fact checking or whatever. But I think Kamala could have handled that and it wouldn't have actually affected what she said. And I think she still would have gotten under Trump's skin and still would have resulted in the sort of jumbled chaos that came out of his mouth. So
I think
the actual result of the debate would not have been any different, even if you had had moderators that were obviously friendly to Trump in the same way you had them that were obviously friendly to Kamala.
Right, right. Now this next part, Coyle, I'm going to preface by saying that in the last calendar week, I have put no fewer than 14 pieces of cardboard into my recycling bin with the words printed on them, Donald Trump does not support Project 2025. But I mean, you know, because again, you know, it doesn't pass through my hands for long. It pretty much goes from my mailbox to the recycling bin. But because I see that in print so often, you know, the constant refrain of Project 2025 still strikes me as weird. I mean, it strikes me, honestly, the way that death panels struck me 10 years ago. I, you know, it's right. One of those things, like, I mean, the accuser keeps repeating it, even though the accused keeps dispatching it with, you know, very basic, you know, look kind of facts.
Yeah, I mean, it is an easy target to sort of, again, use that one-liner, right? Use the use the bumper sticker quote where you can say, I am not only attacking the candidate, I'm attacking everything he stands for. And the fact that the candidate keeps saying, but I don't stand for that, really isn't relevant.
Right.
Who cares, right? We all know what he really stands for. You know, we all know he's secretly in favor of Project 2025, even though no one really knows what it is. Like, we know that that's where he's at.
It
captures the worst of the right wing, and we can attack this all at once. Right. It was also...
And honestly, I mean, that was one of those moments, you know, I occasionally, in spite of myself, I find Donald Trump charming, and that was one of those moments when he said, Project 2025, I mean, I don't support it. I haven't even read it. And I mean,
I believe that. He's probably not lying.
I do, too. That is not at all hard for me to believe, because apparently it's several hundred pages.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is that, too.
And by the way, Coyle, I will say, just for the record, that I have been checking every few days on eBay to see if I can get one of those giant-sized DNC Project 2025s, and so far, no one's listing any for sale. So.
I mean, there might just be the one that they were using on stage, so...
In which case it is, I mean, truly a collector's item.
Absolutely. I bet Kamala has that somewhere. If I were her, I would have that. That's for the presidential museum someday.
That absolutely is.
But yeah, so she mentioned that. I didn't hear her mention the word joy. I was kind of waiting on that, and I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't think she mentioned it of herself during the convention either. To be fair, so I mean,
well,
you know,
that may be.
I feel like that's something that came from, you know, the party that was, you know, in a desperate hurry and needed some kind of shtick for the convention, so they said, oh, I know.
Sure. Well, I was talking with my students about this morning. We disagreed on whether Trump ever said "Make America Great Again" or not. Like the tagline
during
from his campaign during the debate.
Okay. I've heard him say it.
Well, yeah, I've heard him say it too. But I mean, during the debate, did the sort of core tagline. So we heard Harris's "We're not going back," right? That's kind of the one she's using.
Sure.
I don't remember hearing it, though. He did offer to send her a MAGA hat, so maybe that counts.
Yes.
Which she took. Yeah, she took in good humor. I appreciated that she could at least laugh along with that, whether she thought it was funny or not. That was the right response.
Right.
Like her going over and shaking his hand at the beginning, right? Whether she wanted to or not, that was the correct thing to do, and she gets full points for that.
Right.
I forget what the exact number is, but it's been a while since presidential candidates have shaken hands before a debate.
Right.
I want to say back to Romney and Obama, but don't quote me on that. I don't remember for sure.
Right. No, that makes sense.
But the typical grand vision, make America great again statement didn't come. Instead, we got,
right,
again, this ocean of just stuff all kind of jumbled together.
And it was Fox News shorthand. I mean, you know, I mean, that's what really struck me is that, again, I don't even know if he's capable of thinking in terms of, and I mean, I'm almost saying I don't think he's capable of thinking like a teacher. But, I mean, I don't know if he's capable of thinking in terms that an uninitiated person, you know, who happened to tune into this debate, which we've already discussed, might not actually exist.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, is he capable of, you know, presenting to the uninitiated whatever it is that is Trumpism? You know, or, I mean, is it something that only people who are already Trumpists can become? And, you know, to become a Trumpist is an entirely negative phenomenon that results from disillusionment with someone else, so you flee into the arms of MAGA? Or, I mean, is there actually a positive case for this worldview? Because, I mean, I can't remember hearing it, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, because, you know, certainly the world is bigger than my field of awareness.
Yeah, so there are people who are trying to give it a positive articulation. So we've talked briefly about national conservatism. Yeah. Ed and I did an episode on this years ago, which J.D. Vance is a central figure in that. So it's not unconnected from the Trump campaign. Now, Trump himself, I can't imagine, has any interest in it whatsoever. But there are attempts to fill that out. But you're right. I mean, this really is it is kind of Trump's capabilities that were running through the background and eventually the foreground of this debate up to and including the setting of the debate itself, right? The shutting off of microphones while the other person was talking, which kind of worked and kind of didn't. They were off, but they immediately turned them back on as soon as one of them started trying to respond. Right. So I understand why they did it that way. I think there's a point where it's just not effective if you're just going to immediately turn it back on.
Yeah. And I wondered a few times during the debate whether someone was going to get reprimanded or commended for turning them back on, because it seems like that does defeat the purpose of having the mic shut off, you know, during the designated time for the other candidate to speak.
Right. Yeah, and it probably slowed Trump down a little bit. It's obviously a reference to the 2020 debates when Trump not stop interrupting, interrupting.
Right.
So. Yeah, I assume that they basically said we won't be doing a debate. Although, I did see a report that said it was the Trump campaign that insisted on it. So.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, and again, it's because on Fox News and on other venues, you know, I mean, people kept saying that is what made Joe Biden's, you know, flaming train wreck happen back in June, right? The fact that Trump couldn't interrupt him, so therefore, I mean, America had a chance to watch what happens when, you know, as sad as it is, I mean, you know, his age starts to show.
Yeah. Yeah, which hadn't happened 4 years before, but did happen this year. So.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Although, why you would expect that to happen with Harris, I don't know. I mean, she is not Joe Biden. She's
years younger. I don't think Trump's thought process is that sophisticated. I think his mindset was probably, it worked in June, it'll work now.
Yeah, that may be. I mean, as much as his mindset is doing anything, that's entirely possible.
Yeah. I suppose, I mean, his mindset is defeating his enemy.
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, if what defeated his enemy last time was giving his enemy time to self-destruct, I mean, I think that he's got enough of an instinct that he wants to do that again. I think what he misestimated is just how unique Joe Biden was in his capacity for self-destruction.
The phrase, Nathan, is misunderestimated.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 2004. Yeah.
I mean, he obviously one of the things that he was prepped on with, again, whatever little bit there was of that, was that he needs to identify her with Biden, right? And he kept starting to do that and then just never followed through because, again, he did not deliver a coherent, long-form thoughts of any kind, even when he had time to do it, and kept getting derailed by whatever she had said that set him off. So that chance to, you know, do the thing that worked 2 months ago, he could have done that, but he didn't capitalize on it.
Right. And I wonder whether this is one of the places where having a crowd would have helped him, because they would have cued him to continue down a certain line of attack.
Right.
Whereas, I mean, in a quiet room, it was just Trump in his own mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we saw some of that. So you've got in our outline a specific outline mentioned, a specific question mentioned here. Maybe we should get to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was, you know, the one that, you know, like I said, has generated the most commentary on the actual content. Now, I really should have been more careful in my report earlier, and you corrected me that plenty of people are talking about the debate in the abstract.
Sure.
But as far as any utterance from the debate, the one that's getting all of the chatter is the dog eating part. So I'm reciting this from my outline. So this is not a transcript of the debate. This is from the mind of Gilmore. So listeners, you know, take this as the artifact that it is. So as I jotted things down as I was watching, the moderator posed a question to Vice President Harris. You know, why did your administration wait until 2024 to advance border control? You know, the border situation obviously was very real and very pressing for a couple years before that, at least. Good question, I thought.
She did not say because it's an election year.
Right? Yeah. No, what she did say was, you realize that it's Trump that tried to kill that bill, right? And also, when Trump has a rally, he gets so rambling and it lasts so long that people start leaving early. And then that's when Trump came back with, what's really awful is that, Harris and Biden are letting people over the border by the millions. They're all violent criminals. And in Ohio, they're eating people's dogs. And at that point, the moderator, in a moment that, was just comedy gold. I don't think he was trying to be funny, but it really was. He just leaned up very quietly to the microphone and said, there have been no confirmed reports of any undocumented aliens eating dogs. And then Trump insisted that, yes, they are.
And they got into it over what the city manager had said.
Yep. And then they went back to Harris and said, do you have a response? And her response was, Republicans really hate this guy. There's 200 of them that, will say that they're not going to endorse him. And then Trump comes back with, well, there might be some Democrats that hate you, too, if you ever fired any of them for their incompetence. And then at that point, I was sitting on my couch here in Georgia saying, why did they wait until 2024 to press a border control bill? I feel like that question still deserves an answer. We might never get one, but
yeah.
But like I said, Coyle, this exchange, and it was about a 10-minute exchange. I just gave it the 102-second treatment, but it was a solid 10-minute exchange. Was just so telling for me because I'll grant your assessment because you're a better observer of these things than I am that Trump won in the public eye.
Oh, no. But, Harris won in the public eye.
That's what I meant. That's what I reversed it. I apologize.
Yeah. I'm like, holy cow, no.
No. Harris won in the public eye. Sorry, I misspoke there. But from where I was sitting, both of them were just clowns. And again, it might just be because I was younger and I wasn't paying the attention that I'm paying now that I'm 47. But I just feel like there were presidential debates when I was younger where, policy was actually disputed.
Yeah. And again, Harris avoided policy. Trump did not avoid policy, but didn't do any kind of work to make coherent arguments about policy.
Saying that undocumented immigrants are eating people's dogs is not policy.
No. That's certainly true. He talked about the border. He talked about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. He talked about Ukraine and Russia were mentioned. He did. Again, It wasn't even really about policy.
That was, if I got in a room with Putin, I could get him to withdraw his armor divisions.
Right.
And I'm thinking, no, you couldn't. And again, that might be just my too narrow notion of what counts as a policy utterance, but that doesn't strike me as a policy utterance.
Yeah. Again, it was a mess of a debate for sure, but I think it was a mess on the Trump side. Kamala Harris did exactly what she intended to do. And
right.
Did a good job.
I think that what Harris intended to do stank.
Well, her policy positions are disliked by a significant chunk of the American people.
And that's why we have debates, so that the American people can hear it out loud.
Yes, but if the American people hear it out loud, they won't vote for her.
Then why have a debate?
So you can turn them against the other side, right? It's still a political win for her.
Yeah, so again, Coyle, because you are a more consistent and a more professional observer of this than I am, I think it's not bothering you as much as it bothers me, but I really did just keep asking, why are we taking up TV time with this?
So I remember back in 2004, vice presidential debate. It was John Edwards and Dick Cheney, and one of the questions, one of Cheney's daughters is a lesbian, and there was a question for him about gay marriage, his response to the question about supporting or opposing gay marriage was, "Thank you for your kind words about my daughter," and then the moderator said, "Do you have any follow up to that?" And he said, "No, I don't. Next question." And so that was sort of my first. it was my first exposure to the direct dodge of a question.
Oh, sure,
to the point where you're not even like you're not even pretending to try to answer it.
Right.
So I've had that on my mind for a while.
Okay, I got 20 years at this point. Now, what's funny is that same cycle of debates in 2004, and apparently that's the year we're going to refer to this episode. Some
yeah,
episodes
sure.
it's 92.
Hey,
some,
20 years ago.
This time it's 24 or 2004. Pardon me. But what I remember from that is being so impressed with John Kerry on the presidential debates, and then so impressed with Dick Cheney in the vice presidential debate that they could actually talk about policy. And then what John Edwards and what George W. Bush had in common is they had been very carefully coached to repeat their taglines over and over and over again,
yeah.
irrespective of the question. And I remember, I mean, coming away from those debates thinking, okay, you know, I kind of wish that we could have a coalition ticket of Kerry and Cheney, because they would probably despise each other, but I have a sense that they actually know how to run a government. And then,
so,
and then Edwards and Bush, I mean, could just do TV commercials.
So, again, referencing both 2004 and this, the National Review coverage.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can imagine yourself in 2004 and someone says to you, in 2024, the Democratic candidate for president is going to brag about being endorsed by Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
What's your response?
Oh, I wouldn't have believed it, Coyle.
No,
I mean, that's
the insane world we live in, right?
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, I mean, I should say that in 2004, I mean, the Bush-Cheney ticket horrified me. I was very much against the Iraq War. I didn't want them to win. But I was impressed that when posed a question about actual policy, not about his family life,
yeah.
he could talk in paragraphs about domestic and foreign policy.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. like I said, I mean, I didn't want him running the country, but I sure wanted him in the room when the conversations happened.
Well, and that's why Cheney was picked, right? Bush did
yeah,
not have
yeah.
national experience, and Cheney had a ton of it. He'd been
sure.
Chief of staff for the former Bush. He'd been a congressman. I think he was he Secretary of Defense? I mean, he was something else.
George H.W. Bush, yeah.
So I mean, he'd done a ton of stuff, which again is a contrast with today, right? We basically have
right.
Three and a half people who functionally have no national experience,
right,
in any meaningful way. I mean, Kamala Harris has been vice president, but when before she became the nominee, you know, when was the last time you saw Kamala Harris in public as vice president?
Right, right.
And she was senator, but her main function as senator was running for president. J.D. Vance basically has no experience. Tim Walz has no experience. Trump, despite being president for 4 years, I'm willing to say has very little experience. I doubt he knows how the government works. So
No. Well, I mean, no, you don't have to speculate about that, because every time he opens his mouth, he says things that clearly fly in the face of the actual functionings of 21st century nation states, right?
What should be his lived experience?
I would just sit Zelensky and Putin down in a room, and by the time we left, the war would be over. And I'm thinking,
yeah.
No, it wouldn't. No, it would not.
I mean, but, one of them might kill the other, so I guess it might be. But
but there'd be people on both sides to take over that war. Wars are not between individuals. They are between nation states.
Yeah.
And, you know, the prosecution and the ending of wars between nation states requires the functioning of nation states.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like I said.
And I hate being the voice of realpolitik. I'm supposed to be the, you know, the hippie pacifist guy. But I, you know, like, why do I have to be that guy in this room, Coyle? And I realize I'm not talking about you.
I understand.
Presidential candidates.
Right, right. Well, and again, that is yet another question that could have been asked and insisted on by the moderators and just wasn't.
Right.
It was asked, but then there was no follow-up. There was no pushback on Harris, and Trump's answer was incoherent, so...
Yeah, there's nothing to push back on.
Well, we've spent more time talking about the debate than any one issue in the debate. Anything else you want to bring up about the mess?
Oh, I mean, you know... one thing that, I mean, you know, again, just came back to me over and over is just the bizarre cognitive dissonance of Project 2025. And I know you're less troubled about this than I am, as with so many things. But, you know, I mean, it feels like, I mean, you know, I know that, you know, it's well documented how many times Donald Trump just makes things up out of thin air.
Yeah.
But it really does come out of thin air, or at least it seems to, right? I mean, with the Harris campaign, I mean, they are just deliberately pushing this line in the face of, you know, just the most obvious documentable printed facts that, you know, the campaign has said this. Donald Trump has said this into several microphones. It just strikes me as bizarre. And again, the question of audience keeps coming to me, right? I mean, you know, I need to look up this report that I read a few years ago about the districts that switched from Obama to Trump, because, you know, what the essay argued, and I need to go find it, is that people didn't really change their minds and they didn't really change their parties. It's just that all of those districts had very large populations of low propensity voters, and Obama activated one demographic of low propensity voters that McCain absolutely didn't.
Right.
And then Donald Trump activated a population of low propensity voters that Hillary Clinton, or that, back that up, John McCain absolutely didn't.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, the argument of this article was that, you know, when it comes to the most recent, you know, let's say 4 or 5 presidential election cycles, there really haven't been swing voters. There have been stay-at-homes and there have been show-ups.
Yeah, there have been some interesting surveys done with that, and it's been a couple of years since I've looked at them. So if I try to remember the details, I'd butcher them. I remember one study focused in on some of the swing districts, not necessarily that Obama or had won compared to Trump, but that it switched parties for whatever reason in 2016. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they found is that a common feature is a growing number of minorities.
Yeah.
Tends to bring out more majority voters in these districts, which then Trump appeals directly to that. That was in 2016. That didn't work in 2020. So
the
same appeal was not quite as strong. I think we're with the 2025, the Project 2025, and then the attempt of Trump to bring up the border and to appeal to those low propensity voters. I think in both cases, both candidates are trying to tap into an anti-establishment mentality that obviously dominates, right? I mean, we are in an anti-establishment era. Trump is going for the anti-establishment, drain the swamp. They are not protecting you. They are not protecting the integrity of the nation. Not that Trump would ever use that phrasing, but they are not doing their job as the government.
Too many polysyllabic words.
Oh my goodness. and then the Harris side of things is they're going after the establishment of the think tanks and the sort of right-wing elites that are secretly driving the Trump policy machine, as if the right-wing elites didn't absolutely despise Donald Trump from the very core of their beings. But they have been willing to use him, and I think we talked about this last time, right? The Federalist Society in 2016 is really the driving force here. They had come out with a list of judges that they thought would make good Supreme Court judges. And Trump took that list and said, I'm going to pick from this list. So you have an interaction between a presidential candidate and a think tank in a way that is horrifying to the left. Well, now they're trying to tap into that again. The Federalist Society has another list of judges. I have no idea.
Right. I guess this is my question, Coyle. I mean, how many people that are not, you know, hosts of politics podcasts are even aware of the Federalist Society?
Oh yeah, well, after 2016, right? People at Trump rallies would have known. So
fair enough.
But yes, it's on as with the Heritage Foundation, right? It's it's something that people who pay close attention to intellectual politics know about, or if you live in D.C., you have to walk by it if you're going to the Capitol building.
Point taken. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. So again, you know, like I said, I mean, and I don't have an answer to this. I don't keep posing it in hopes that you'll, you know, hit the answer that matches my answer, because I just don't know.
Sure.
But, you know, having been away from, you know, presidential debates as hour and a half events for 20 years, So, I mean, I am one of the soundbite people. I'll go ahead and own up to that, right? You know, this was just a bizarre event to me. And, you know, I kept wondering, you know, and I know I keep repeating this, but, you know, who is this event for? And, I mean, I think you've summed it up well. The answer is it's for you and me. It's for people who make political content for online consumption, right? So, I mean, you know, we are the I don't even know what to call it, you know, the street dealers.
I mean, I don't think anyone's going to listen to this podcast and think, you know, I really should go listen to that debate.
No.
If they are, we're failing here.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a bizarre ecosystem. And again, you know, I don't have a solution to it or even a good question for it. It's just something that, you know, having watched this debate, you know, now 19 hours ago, you know, I still don't have an answer for what exactly I was watching or who it was for, other than for people who generate political content. And that seems like a terrible answer. I mean, given, again, how different I feel like it was 20 years ago. So, I mean, I'm going to return to that question, Coyle, because, I mean, I still want to hear your commentary on it, because you study this, you teach this. I mean, were debates different 20 years ago, or am I just, do I have nostalgia goggles?
You know, it's hard to say, because I'm teaching a class on the presidency now, and I tell my students, you always have to put a footnote in that says except Trump when you're dealing with the presidency.
Right.
For basically any metric you want to use, you're going to need that footnote there. Sure. Up to and including what is the role of the first lady, right? Even that gets an except Trump note. The problem is
a little bit more about that, because I have an impression of what you might mean, but
so often first ladies will either be heavily involved in policy or heavily involved in sort of White House charity work, sometimes both. So Hillary Clinton famously was put in charge of healthcare reform in the 90s. Laura Bush did a lot of work with AIDS relief in Africa. I mean, that's sort of the two streams that first ladies in the second half of the 20th century have tended to
Michelle
fall
Obama
into.
School nutrition.
Yep. Melania Trump, she did some charity work, but she didn't even move to D.C. I mean, that's how far off the radar that Melania Trump was. And instead, Trump's kids kind of stepped into that historic first lady
sense.
Role. So, again, it is different, right? It's just not the way that presidencies have tended to work. So with debates, yes, except Trump, debates used to be different. The problem is Trump has been involved in the last three presidential debates, right? He's been one half of them. So at some point, the footnote is now the rule, right? At some point, it's no longer an exception. This is just how it is. And we won't really know that until there's another presidential debate that doesn't involve Donald Trump in 2028, which I assume by definition won't. I don't know. He'll be 82. It's not technically too old to run, but man, I don't know.
Like, you got to think eventually he's not going to show up for one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. So yes, debates are different. Is the difference an aberration because of the presence of Donald Trump, or is different the new normal? I don't know the answer to that. And I don't think we will know for 4 years.
Okay. So it's possible then that in 2028, we're going to get more of this.
Yeah. Yeah, entirely possible.
That's depressing. That's depressing.
When Vivek runs against Kamala Harris for the White House.
That's even more depressing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because, I mean, like you, Coyle, back in 2004, I was railing against, you know, would you just answer the question? Would you quit dodging? You know, would you quit repeating your key catchphrases? And, you know, now, 20 years later, I'm thinking, man, those were the good old days.
Yeah, certainly true. Well, anything else from the debate?
Nothing leaps to mind. I mean, anything that you want to point up?
No, I don't like to keep thinking about it if I can avoid it.
I gotcha.
I watched it last night, and then I've been talking about it all day today. And it was just kind of sad. We're in a state of affairs where I don't particularly care. Yet again, a state of affairs where I don't really like either candidate.
I
don't know that anyone was the better off because of the debate. I mean, I suppose it's important to remember this is technically our second presidential debate this election cycle. Just the first one meant the presidential candidate dropped out. So.
Right. Yeah, that was a We're going to be talking about that for some years too, I think.
Yeah. And interesting times to be watching politics and
again, that's another thing, you know. And I know the answer is we're not going to go no till 2028, but I mean, I mean, is that going to become a normal tactic going forward? You know, I mean, if the if a presidential debate early in the cycle is lopsided enough, you know, will the party say, all right, we've got precedent now, so we're going to drop this candidate and plug in someone that they haven't had time to develop a campaign against?
Yeah, I don't know. It would certainly be interesting. I know that, I think that Biden should have resigned from the presidency when he decided not to run again and let Kamala take over. And then I think Kamala should have refused to run for election in 2028. She still would get to be president. She would be wildly popular. I mean, popular. And would ruin the value of all Donald Trump 47 merchandise. So there would be a lot of reasons to do that.
Right.
But Biden was also, I mean, his unfitness, I assume it'll be a while before we have another president who's unfit for those reasons.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I guess that's what I'm saying. Will that tactic still be present, even if it is we are losing, and that's the full stop? Because, I mean, after all, I mean, political parties are not governed by the Constitution. They're governed by internal rules. So, I mean, you know, the DNC bigwigs. And for that matter, I mean, you know, if the GOP finally figures out a way to actually run a party the way the DNC does,
yeah,
you know, will that become, you know, sort of a normal tactic that, okay, you know, we're going to nominate somebody at the convention, see what happens in the first debate, and then, you know, I mean, if it is pretty close, we'll hang in there. But if it's lopsided, we'll drop them out, plug someone in that the other person doesn't have negative ads for. Because, I mean, negative ads have run the world for time now. I mean, I'm just thinking like a chess player here more than I am like a political party. But I mean, you know, as a chess player, it seems like that's a gambit that could give you a positional advantage, even if you lose the material.
Yeah. So that's certainly possible. Political parties have historically not liked to gamble.
Okay.
That introduces a sort of element of randomness that parties are not going to be okay with. They would be perfectly okay if the other side did that, even if it meant they had all these ads they couldn't run, because now you're introducing this element of randomness in. And it's an element that worked out in favor for the Democrats, in the Democrats' favor this time around. They ended with a candidate who is far more popular now than she was in 2019 when she was running on the Democratic ticket.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And that could just as easily have gone the other way, right?
You think it could have. Okay. Because I guess I see the sort of tabula rasa character of presidential candidate Harris rather than primary candidate Harris as something that was a decided advantage.
Yeah, again, it's also assuming that you get someone who is not very well known, which Harris was not very well. I mean, again, as vice president, she was
And you know, you and I have talked about this. I mean, you know, the running joke is always that, you know, the generic Democrat always wins.
Right.
And that's what they've got. They've got generic Democrat. I mean, she has no policies. She has only the sketch of a biography. She doesn't really have any kind of policy record.
Right.
And, you know, with a compliant press, I mean, you know, there's very little discussion of any actual policy involvement that she had.
Well, and I mean, the more I think about this, the more I'm like, well, on the one hand, you would have to make sure that you don't have some known and established figure getting, you know, jumping in. So if you know, Hillary Clinton had stood up and said, well, I want to be the candidate this year.
Well, that would have been a disaster because she's very well known in terms of policy and personality. Yeah.
But she also has pull in the party. So
yeah.
You would want to make sure that doesn't happen. And of course, we can't forget the primaries, right? Theoretically, people are voting on these candidates. So just dumping someone, you are now working against the will of your voters.
Is there enough realpolitik there to do that anyway?
Yeah. And again, Trump, in the hands of a better debater, Trump did make this point. You know, no one has ever voted for Kamala Harris for president.
Right.
Including in the Democratic primary. He did make that point. He just didn't make it very well.
That's a point really that he could have hammered. Driven that home. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly he could have and should have done that. over and over and over, nobody wants you to be president, should have been his repeated line. Not least of all, Joe Biden certainly doesn't want you to be president, but
he didn't. And again, he tried to do that once.
Yeah.
But then he wandered off again.
Yep. So,
which I mean, that could be the theme of every Donald Trump campaign. Like,
yeah, certainly.
He had this triumphal moment, and then he saw something shiny.
Yep. So you'd have to take that into account too, right? What does it mean that we are running someone that is contrary to the wishes, not just of the American people, but to our own party members?
Right. Right.
That's harder. I think that's a bigger hill to climb.
But like I said, you know, I guess I just think of this like a chess player. It seems like they have discovered a new opening.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I mean, I feel like we've talked about what needs to be talked about with regards to this debate. Listeners, I think our next episode is going to be another what if. I keep pestering Coyle with my what if questions, and I've actually got another one in the hopper that I just haven't written up notes for. So there might be another couple what if. But this next one is going to be what if a newly elected president actually pushed legislation to limit the powers of the executive branch.
Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the City of Man podcast. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Our press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family and get more information about this show or our show notes by visiting ChristianHumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast, or get in touch with us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com. This is Coyle Neal reminding you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and render unto God those things that are God's.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking,